It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Jobless claims on the rise again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis. A really big computer breach is going on, plus a cheaper alternative fuel. All that ahead. First, though, where's Wall Street? We're all over the place this morning. The S&P up just a tad, about 0.05%. The NASDAQ off by 0.2%. The Dow up by 13 points at 10,322. And European markets are slightly higher right now, under 0.25%. Walmart today reported a higher quarterly profit, but said sales at existing stores were lower. They say earnings could miss Wall Street estimates. Looking at Asia, stocks closed there mixed today as well. Number of workers seeking first-time jobless benefits jumped unexpectedly last week by 31,000. Analysts were expecting a slight decline. Let's hear what Diane Swonk has to say about it. She's chief economist at Mesirow Financial, joining us live this morning from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
You know, employment is such a key factor in our recovery right now. And, you know, the White House and Congress are trying to address the issue. Does the fact, Diane, that unemployment claims were up deflate a bit any thought that the labor market is getting better?
Well, it really confirms something we already know, and that is that hiring remains elusive. Firms are more optimistic about the economy in general, but still nervous that we could do a double dip and stumble again. And as a result, they're just not committing to hiring like we'd like to see them do.
We're not seeing the numbers we did during the peak of the recession, but I got to tell you, I mean, I thought we'd see some better indicators sooner rather than later. I mean, where are these jobs?
Well, the bottom line is, you know, this recession was a financial crisis-induced recession, not the Fed-induced. And as a result, you know, it's not as easy when the Fed hits the gas for things to get going again. In fact, it's, you know, almost as if the Fed dropped the money from the helicopters and it's all still stuck in the trees. Small businesses in particular, which are employment generators, are really reluctant to hire because they can't get access to credit.
And talking about the Fed, of course, they're going to have to figure out a way to, you know, exit an exit strategy for what they've been doing for the economy lately. And they're keeping an eye on inflation. Producer prices rose faster than expected last month. Do you think inflation is creeping into the picture, Diane, or do you think, given the time of year it is, this is a bit of a fluke?
Well, it's a bit of a head fake. Much of the increase was due to energy prices. Once we scaled that back, the other increase in core level prices after flatlining last month was due to light trucks. And the vehicle market is hardly a harbinger of broader-based inflation, given how weak it is.
So, all right, so no inflation, and you think the exit strategy is let's keep these interest rates about where they are for an extended period of time.
Exactly. I mean, well, even Tom Hennig, who is the most who dissented at the last minute, he didn't dissent because he thought they should raise rates anytime soon. He just thought, well, instead of extended period, maybe we should say for some length of time. I mean, we're really kind of tweaking here. We're walking a fine line of saying we're not going to do it anytime soon.
Diane Swonk from Chicago. Diane, thanks.
Thank you.
There is a major cyber attack going on right now, and hundreds of U.S. companies have already been infected. That's according to this computer security company, NetWitness. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson is with us live from our New York bureau with the latest. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
How big is this attack?
Well, NetWitness says it's already infected 75,000 machines around the world, including computers at about 500 American companies. It's been going on for 18 months, and it's supposedly one of the largest attacks of its kind. NetWitness says when it briefed the FBI and other agencies that U.S. officials were surprised at the size of the attack.
And who's doing this, Jeremy?
Well, I spoke with Eddie Schwartz. He's the chief security officer at NetWitness. He's based in Mumbai, and he says the attackers are organized criminals. They're thought to be in Europe and China. And Schwartz says this attack is all about acquiring information.
Gathering usernames and passwords, gathering on individuals' access into systems, and gathering other types of information that could be used by other entities to gain access to corporate systems, corporate websites, corporate intellectual property, and so on.
And Jeremy, were these companies just totally caught off guard?
Eddie Schwartz says they were, and that this is a wake-up call for companies that they need to change their focus in cybersecurity from preventing attacks to trying to figure out how to deal with them more quickly once they happen.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reporting live from New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, February 18th, 2010, at marketplace.org. It's Google versus the Justice Department in a New York courtroom today. A federal judge is set to decide whether the company's plans for building a massive online library are legal. Sarah Gardner reports.
Today's hearing will determine whether a controversial deal between Google and two big groups of authors and publishers should stand. The deal settled a lawsuit over Google's ambitious book scanning effort. Writers and publishers decried it as a massive copyright infringement. Google paid $125 million and promised them a share of future revenues. But the Department of Justice still objects. It believes the deal undermines copyright laws and may eventually hand Google a monopoly in the online book market. Jamie Court is president of Consumer Watchdog.
The reality is when the Department of Justice comes in and says, this company has too much power over a market with this type of deal, a federal judge is very likely to listen to that.
Over the past 5 years, Google has scanned millions of books. The online search giant contends that if the judge approves the settlement, it will, quote, open the virtual doors to the greatest library in history. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
A major case of wine fraud has hit the United States. A dozen French wine producers and traders have been found guilty of mislabeling 18 million bottles of Pinot Noir. More from Marketplace's Europe correspondent, Stephen Beard.
U.S. winery Ian J. Gallo fell victim to one of the biggest frauds in wine history. They thought they were buying Pinot Noir for their Red Bicyclette brand. In fact, it was an inferior and much cheaper blend of grapes. A dozen French wine producers and traders received suspended jail sentences and hefty fines for the fraud. French customs officers with a nose for wine detected the scam. American customers were none the wiser. Chris Losh of Imbibe magazine is not surprised.
Most people would struggle to know what Pinot Noir tastes like. The consumers generally are in profound ignorance when it comes to wine, which is something of an indictment of the trade's inability to educate and make it accessible over the last 20 or 30 years.
In a statement, Ian J. Gallo expressed its deep disappointment over the fraud, but said it wanted to assure its customers this is not a health and safety issue. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Compared to the entire stimulus package, $1.5 billion doesn't seem like much. Well, yesterday, the White House announced that much money for special transportation grants. And as Andrea Bernstein reports from member station WNYC, competition for the money is already heating up.
The rollout started with a tweet from Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. It said, "Grr, DOT's Tiger is coming." Tiger.
Transportation investment generating economic recovery.
That's Will Schroer of the group Smart Growth America. He says Tiger grants do more than just get money out into the economy.
But also point the way toward the kinds of transportation projects we need to be funding for the future.
Among the grants, untangling the network of passenger and freight rail lines around Chicago, building a 17-mile bus rapid transit line in Las Vegas, and a network of bike lanes connecting Philadelphia over the Delaware River to its poor cousin, Camden, New Jersey. Skeptical a bike lane causes economic activity? Spencer Finch of the Pennsylvania Environmental Council says you're wrong.
The more people you have out there biking, the more people you have out there walking. You know, people attract people.
Finch says one Philadelphia bike lane built earlier was supposed to attract 500 people a day and now gets 16,000 daily riders. In New York, I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
Walmart today reported a higher quarterly profit but said sales at existing stores were lower. The retail giant forecast earnings that could miss Wall Street estimates. But Walmart keeps growing by expanding into urban markets, and supporters say that provides struggling economies a much-needed boost. A new study, though, questions that claim. From Chicago Public Radio, Adrian Hill reports.
Political headwinds against Walmart have been fierce all over the country. In Chicago, Walmart has only gotten a toehold in the city, where it has just one store on the west side. It's late afternoon. The parking lot is about three quarters full. Will Wells is walking out with some lemonade, Hawaiian punch, and underwear.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It has a lot of things that I need, and like I said, it's not that far from my house.
Right down the street, Smokey Lee runs a shop that sells and installs audio equipment. He's pretty happy with Walmart, too.
People buy radio from there and come get installation from here.
So since it's open, you think it's been better?
Yeah, more people, more traffic.
But economics professor David Merriman at the University of Illinois at Chicago says the study he co-authored shows Walmart's opening here has forced small businesses out, and
the net effect is that the number of jobs that were lost by those businesses closing was pretty much a match with the number of jobs that Walmart added when it opened its store. So it was kind of pretty much a wash.
Merriman says that should change the debate for big cities that are thinking of letting Walmart in.
Instead of talking about jobs, whether being for or against Walmart is pro or anti-jobs, what we really should be talking about is what kind of neighborhoods do we want? What kind of development do we want?
For its part, Walmart is contesting the validity of the study. It hired a third-party research firm to review Merriman's findings. The report finds flaws with the original study. Right or wrong, Morningstar analyst Joel Blumer says research like Merriman's might slow Walmart's move into big cities, but won't stop it.
I think in the end, their kind of low price offering will win out. So it happens eventually. It takes longer.
Blumer guesses it's just a matter of time before Walmart shopping bags are as ubiquitous in cities as they are everywhere else. In Chicago, I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Crude oil is still much in demand. There's been a leveling off, though, in developed countries such as the United States. It's not just the recession. It also has to do with cleaner alternatives. As Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports from the Sustainability Desk, one of those products just got a lot cheaper.
The product is a type of ethanol, not energy-intensive corn ethanol that uses lots of land and water.
The same process that converts corn into ethanol works with biomass, which is just another name for the waste from fields and forests.
Biomass is less energy-intensive, but it has required an expensive enzyme to produce. Now, biotech company Novozymes has developed a cheaper enzyme that can make biomass ethanol for less than $2 a gallon. Cynthia Bryant is with Novozymes.
So really, the ultimate goal is to be competitive with gasoline.
Bryant says this new enzyme brings biomass ethanol closer to that goal. Jeremy Martin is with the Union of Concerned Scientists.
In the next few years, when we see the first facilities coming online, that's when the cost effectiveness of this technology will be tested.
And he says that's when we'll see if biomass ethanol shows up at the pump. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, an Oak Creek, Wisconsin man and his iPhone are reunited after someone took it from his car. What the thief didn't count on was the phone knew its exact coordinates. The gadget's owner subscribes to this service that features a global positioning system, GPS. The smartphone owner tracked his device, even found a picture of the suspect's house, and he gave it all to police, who then found the suspect and introduced him to other cool gadgets inside their cruiser. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Get the podcast while you're there. Share your thoughts with us, too. And the latest business news, of course, inside marketplace.org. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.